Podcast.
Are we saying podcast?
Welcome back to Fanboys and Filthy Casual. Back at you once again. This is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
So this is the second episode we're going to say that, please excuse me and Harold, we're still kind of recovering. Harold is...
It's been a week and we're still... This is not one of our usual jokes where it's like, oh, it's actually just the next episode. It's literally been a week since we've recorded our last episode. Still not fully recovered, yeah, but, you know, we
tried. Asthma's still there, Harold's still recovering, and Lewis is just as sexy as ever.
Yeah. My back's fine. If anybody's wondering, my back's great.
Is that what happens when Lewis is like okay and fine?
I think so.
My back is fine.
You both have to suffer, I guess. Okay, sorry, guys.
Well, that is not really the topic for the day, our sickness and Lewis's back. We are actually going to be talking today about a movie that we saw, or actually, no, a TV show?
Series
that we just recently saw. We had an opportunity to be part of it, and, you know, it was such a great series, such a great show, and the event itself was so great that we thought it would be... It's worthy enough to actually talk about it in this podcast. Now, you know, before we do begin there, because we're going to be straying away from our usual fanboy experience, we kind of have to kind of shoehorn some fanboy information. Just so happened that there is like one of the biggest news events that that has occurred. There's something that fanboys out there is like up in arms, and of course that is Lewis.
The big news that Disney and Sony are not playing nice with their toy Spider-Man. So basically, news came out that the rights to the movie Spider-Man with the current one starring Tom Holland and Zendaya, the rights are now up in the air. Sony wants their Spider-Man back, and Marvel just wanted a piece of the pie, a bigger piece of the pie. And now they are just not talking anymore. Mom and Dad don't want to talk, and it's very sad. So we can't, you know, they can't share Spider-Man. That broke the internet.
Well, are we giving our opinions already?
I don't know.
No, we should. I mean, it's like, it's kind of like Lewis said. It's a funny thing because remember that previous to Civil War, the character of Spider-Man had always been proprietary to Sony Pictures. That's why they had to make those awesome... air quotes if you can't, obviously you guys can't see it. But the Andrew Garfield series, because if they didn't, then that property would have lapsed and they would have to give it up. So that was the reason they made those movies. And then they were like, you know what, we realize that he can be part of a bigger picture here, and they lent him out. So they let just the Spider-Man character and I guess just a few of his universe things, but for the most part it was just supposed to be, I think, just Spider-Man in terms of being part of the MCU. So, yeah, they did pretty successfully, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean,
over $1 billion for just the last one.
We mentioned it in the last episode. Far From Home is the biggest movie Sony's made since ever.
I think ever, yeah. Because the biggest one they said was Skyfall.
Oh, really? Oh, so it was a James Bond movie before then, one of their other bigger franchises. Yeah.
Damn, they're really into the British people, aren't they?
Yeah, they love them. Unlike Dennis, they love them some Tom Holland. Yeah.
Now, before we go on to our opinions, I think it's good for our listeners, maybe they're not that familiar, exactly how this works. You know, everybody thinks it's Marvel.
Yeah.
Shouldn't Marvel actually just belong... Shouldn't Marvel just belong to everybody? So, Lewis, Harold, maybe you can kind of enlighten
us. Sure,
how does this work?
Let's do a little loose news of how this all happened. So...
He's just pretty proud that his name rhymes and stuff. Because like we said, we can't do anything that rhymes with our names.
Which, by the way, just for those people who might not know, we've been trying to get rid of Lewis. But every single time we try, we hear Lose Sues.
Ooh, that's a good one. Copyright. That's more me like, typing on my phone.
It's like more like Lose Boos.
Dang it. Okay, so, you know, for those who are kind of casual or not quite understanding how this all happens. So, Spider-Man, the comic book character, is owned entirely by Marvel. So, in the 90s, however...
What the Marvel are we talking about?
Right, here? So here we go. So, we're going to go into our time machine and go to the halcyon days of the 1990s.
Woo, woo, woo. I don't know what... don't know why that was this temporal sense.
So back in those days, it's hard to imagine now, the comic book company Marvel was actually going into bankruptcy. So, you know, please jump in, because all this information I got from the wonderful magazine Wizard from back in the day. Cool. So, you know, this is very accurate news. So when Marvel was in fear of bankruptcy, one of the ways that they got they saved themselves is by basically selling the movie rights to some of their properties. So now during the 80s and 90s, the biggest characters that Marvel had were X-Men, Fantastic Four, and Spider-Man. So that's how this whole thing gets a little convoluted. So in those days, in the 90s, Fox decided to buy X-Men and the Fantastic Four, while Sony decided we're going to buy Spider-Man and his little corner of the Marvel Universe, leaving, you know, the ironically, fast forward to a couple decades later, leaving Marvel with just Iron Man, Captain America, Thor,
who at that time
were basically what, lower tier superheroes, yes. Right? I mean, back, you know, we were collecting comic books back then in the 90s. You had what, 5-6 Spider-Man issues, same amount of X-Men, one Avengers title, maybe one Captain America at that.
Yeah, at that. Mostly the only time you really know about Iron Man or Thor or Captain America was through the Avengers.
Right, or through a crossover or some like, crossover, yeah, yeah. Oh, in this X-Men issue, it's, you know, Captain America. It's like, oh, I guess he's still around. So that's how Marvel, the comic book company, kept afloat. Now, fast forward a few, like I mentioned, a few decades later, Disney takes the risk and buys Marvel part and parcel. So Marvel starts making all these great movies that we all know and love today. So that's, you know, including the Chris Evans Captain America and a Tony Stark, RDJ's Tony Stark. And so, you know, now we're at that point now where, because of what Harold alluded to earlier, because of copyright laws and whatnot, technically Sony, the studios, owns Spider-Man, the movie character. So that's why, if you look back, the Tobey Maguire movies, the Andrew Garfield movies, do not technically fall under what, you know, what we currently think of as Marvel Avengers. So until the last few years, when, you know, Sony and Disney, I guess, came to an impasse and said, yeah, we'll play nice, let's share toys, let's see what we can do out of this. And what they made out of this was literally billions of dollars. Now, so we'll go to the nitty-gritty of the news. What apparently happened was Disney wanted to renegotiate their terms with Sony. Am I correct?
Yeah, the terms are pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Where right now, Sony pretty much foots all the bill for everything. Kevin Feige gets in there and is able to actually be part of the decision-making, which, as we have seen, it has been successful.
Absolutely.
No matter how much I hem and haw about Tom Holland. But at the same time, the only thing, and I can't believe I'm saying the only thing here, that Tom Holland is asking, or Tom Holland, Disney was basically taking in was 5%.
And, yeah, that's crazy to me.
But that was the most important thing, is the toys, which we all know that's big money right there.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand and from what I read, you know, the renegotiation really has become, at least supposedly, it's 50-50 financing. Disney takes one half, Sony takes one half. But because of that, Disney wanted to have 50%.
Right.
You know,
right.
So coming from 5% to 50%, huge jump. And I guess Sony doesn't want to go budge.
The other news that I heard actually was that number was kind of incorrect, but in that they were willing to foot 50% of the bill, but only get 30% of the profits. And still, that's a big, it's just a big jump between 5% and 30%. It's right. Like, if, I imagine if it is $1 billion, it's the difference between $5 million and $50 million and $300 million. Like, it's sort of a big...
That's a couple more acres, man.
No, that's literally another franchise.
Right.
Like, the Godzilla movie that just came out, I think, made $300 million worldwide.
Oh, wow.
And it took, like, you know, worldwide to make that amount. And that's literally just a piece, like a small percentage of what you're making for the complete movie. So it seems like lose-lose right now as the situation goes.
Lose-lose?
Yes.
I'm not taking that one.
No. That's already been established. That's actually our next t-shirt.
Dude, a line of lose.
Lose, loser.
Lose ends.
Lozenges? Lozenges?
Lose ends. Only my wife gets to see that. Yikes.
So, now that we've kind of established what's going on, I guess now the question is, you know, what's their reaction? And it seems like there really is a mixture, you know. We've been seeing, at least in the interwebs, people are like, you know, bemoaning the death of the Spider-Man franchise. Oh no, you know, he's gone. And, you know, there's reports that Tom Holland actually supposedly unfollowed Disney or Sony.
Yeah, I read about that,
you know,
too.
And,
petty.
What a millennial thing to do.
His father supposedly, kind of millennial, his father now was in the talk show or like the news, uh-huh. you know, circus. And now, you know, they're like, he's like, oh, I'm pretty sure those guys can work together. So it really it has become big news. So, you know, I know for a fact that I have a sordid past in terms of Tom Holland. Mm-hmm. That sounds really cool, by the way. But, you know, so I put that to you guys. What is, you know, opinions? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing?
Well, so as of today, I mean, from what I understand, the resolution is basically Sony has taken its ball and is going home, right? Mm-hmm. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically, like, Sony, like,
I'm done.
Yeah, they're literally they're pulling the Foursquare ball away so no one can play the game.
Yeah, I guess so. So yeah, so at this point, there's no more Spider-Man in the MCU. So that's what we're looking at, correct? Okay. Well, it's tough for me to kind of wrap my head around this, and I think it kind of came up in our review of Far From Home, how, you know, it was supposed to be a wrap-up movie. Not that we were anticipating that this kind of drama was going to happen, because this literally came out of nowhere, right? It was like, I think on a Wednesday or whenever, or on a Tuesday, and it just came out of nowhere. We didn't even know that the rights or they were negotiating or this was going down. So we or at least I was a little concerned already that, like, for a story that's supposed to be a standalone Spider-Man movie, there's still a lot of Tony Stark this, Iron Man that, I'm going to be the next Avenger, you know, melodrama. But now that they're in this position where, hypothetically, if again, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom Holland and at least the rest of this cast have at least one or two more movies under contract. So they have to make another movie or break contract. So, you know, this next movie is going to be really interesting because, you know, how they're going to have to pull basically 180. Right, and say like, oh, all that stuff. Like, I'm not gonna mention Tony Stark. Not gonna mention my Iron Spidey suit, which I know Dennis was never a fan of anyway. You know, and maybe they have to go back to the old, you know, Uncle Ben melodrama and be like, oh, Aunt May was married before. Maybe totally forgot about that guy. Sorry, Happy.
Have you seen that hashtag?
No, which one?
The hashtag Save Uncle Ben.
Yeah.
No.
Yikes. He gotta die again.
Exactly.
It's like, you don't want to see Bruce Wayne's parents die again, and you don't want to see Uncle Ben die again.
Oh, jeez. How many times is he gonna get shot down by a mugger, dude?
I mean, it's just unfortunate for that poor guy.
Whoever they cast this time around.
I know this doesn't sound weird, but I'm in the team of, I would side with Sony on this one.
Okay.
Only because if you look at what they've done with the Spider-Man character, they built him to be the next linchpin for the MCU.
Right.
They're pulling the linchpin out. So, like we tried to discuss before, now who do they use as their main character? Who is the new... I mean, as much as we hated that storyline, who is their new Tony Stark? Who is their Iron Man? Who is holding the MCU together? Because my biggest complaint has always been that every movie doesn't need to be attached. Like, it's nice to have movies in their own separate universes. And I was really getting sick of, oh, but where does this movie fit into the whole universe?
Yeah.
Because after like 15 films, I was like, okay, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the end credit's going to be like, oh, yeah, watch this other movie because you have to, because it's going to make sense. Now, you take, and then maybe that strategy was good for them because, yeah, it did build up the smaller properties like Ant-Man and Guardians of the Galaxy. But those characters, for the most part, it's like, enjoy this for 90 minutes, but remember, they're only a small part of the real story. And that the main heroes are always going to be these main Avengers. And you guys will literally be nothing more than side characters. Like, the ending of Endgame, as much as I loved it, it's really just a, these are the only three characters that are supposed to matter.
Yeah.
And then here's everybody else.
Yeah.
So for me, like I said in our Far From Home thing, and even when I was talking about Venom, I was saying it's nice that Venom was separate from the MCU because it was able to develop its own characters, develop its own universe, and it wasn't dependent on the whole MCU. So now, at least for me, I'm in reveling in the fact that, yeah, the Tony Stark storyline is over and done. You know, you can cut out Jon Favreau because, you know, that was never going to really go too much anywhere. And now, technically, you have a Spider-Man story with Spider-Man characters, and that's it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to include anybody else. No one needs to magically pop up in the side. There needs to be no giant murals of battles that happen anywhere else. It's like, now we have Spider-Man. Now he's the biggest character in the universe. Now he's our biggest character in our universe. Now we don't got to share him with anyone.
Yeah.
And is it me just being selfish? No, it's just me saying it's about time that the MCU wasn't the big conglomerate. Literally, it's a Disney thing where it's like, let everything breathe and let it have its own properties. So,
you know, I'm going to have to actually side with Harold on this. You know, I've spent like kind of ranting on the Tom Holland Spider-Man. And the one thing that I've been talking about is that I don't necessarily hate Tom Holland. I just really don't like the way they use the character of Spider-Man. And I personally kind of feel that the person or the group to blame is really, you know, the MCU. Now, the MCU, don't get me wrong, everything that they've done, I enjoyed it, everything's cool, but I kind of agree with Harold that, you know, it's almost like you kind of pigeonholed Spider-Man, you figured out, okay, where does he need to fit in this MCU, and this is going to be his storyline. So they couldn't really do his storyline and still include it. So that's what I'm really excited to see, that there might be actually a movie out there, a Tom Holland Spider-Man movie that I'm going to review, and I'm going to be like, oh my God, this is the greatest Spider-Man
ever. Of all time. He got dragged through the dirt. He's so great.
And, you know, the other reason why I'm pretty excited about it, to be honest, and again, I'm kind of parroting Harold over here, is that how does the MCU handle this?
Because
8 months ago, 9 months before Endgame, the biggest thing right before Captain Marvel came out, that was the big thing. Captain Marvel was going to be the new, you know, pedestal or the new linchpin for the Phase 5. She's going to be the person in charge. And then, you know, all of a sudden we hear, wait a minute, there's going to be another movie. Wait a minute, it's going to be Far From Home. And wait a minute, it's going to be right afterwards. And, you know, that movie, Far From Home, there was no ifs, ands, or buts about that movie. It was, he was going to be, or he was the next Tony Stark.
Yes.
You know, it
was a literal torch passing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean, glass passing.
Right.
Sorry. Exactly. So, you know, it was already going to be something for me. I was already going to hate, you know, what's going to happen.
Such a nerd.
But here's the thing. Now I'm excited for this to see, maybe, just maybe, Feige and the gang, you know, sees this, that maybe he says, you know what, maybe we've been too dependent on one character. Let's develop other characters. Because, you know, Captain Marvel was such a great character in the first movie, but then in Endgame, I kind of feel she kind of got clipped.
Yeah. She was too super tacked on in that film. Like, it's like, oh, we made a Captain Marvel film. She should kind of show up for this. And it was literally just that. It's like, hey, let me blow up this giant thing real quick.
And then they have that scene with the girls and everything.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, is it a bad thing? I honestly don't know. It's impossible for me to determine who's right or who's wrong. It's just still too big, you know, a bunch of billionaires.
Right.
You know, kind of like fighting over, you know, more billions.
Yeah.
You know, so I really can't, you know, I'm not really too hurt by it. But story-wise, you know, storyline-wise, it actually has me a little bit more excited. I know everybody or a lot of people out there are, you know, are sad and they're kind of mourning the fact that it's the end of an era. Yes, good. Mm-hmm. Maybe, just maybe, don't, you know, you have other other things. Maybe you don't need to be just, you know, as Harold said, maybe now's the time for you to focus on different characters. you know, which is exactly kind of the way it worked the first couple of movies.
Yeah,
anyway.
Absolutely. I think you're totally correct. I think if anything, this will be one of those great challenges where hopefully the MCU will arise. Because like I mentioned earlier, I mean, Iron Man at the time, I know it's really hard to imagine now, but he was really a C-lister, right? Like, he was bottom of the barrel, kind of like cool armor, whatever. But, you know, the MCU was basically put in a corner of, like, make a movie or otherwise you're going to go broke.
Yeah.
You know, so hopefully you're right, this will be the challenge. And maybe they'll challenge Ryan Coogler. I know you're championing Captain Marvel, but I'm kind of hoping in my corner of the universe that Black Panther becomes the next Iron Man. You know, he's got a whole mythos in Wakanda and his royalty and, you know, the practical, you know, or not practical, I'm sorry, his opponents and all that stuff. So I'm really excited to see, maybe he'll be the next linchpin. But
then
know,
that's the
knows.
Problem. That's going to be the biggest problem, though, is that if we do focus on the Black Panther, mm-hmm. he has his own, you know, a separate series or separate corner of the world, like, literally and figuratively,
yeah.
you know. And if you try to bring and say, look, the Black Panther is now the new Tony Stark, that means he's going to be away from what we loved.
Yeah, that's
you know?
True.
And
that's
then all
true.
Of a sudden he becomes vanilla Black Panther. You know, it's like mocha.
That's on the Starbucks secret menu.
You're saying it's the white chocolate mocha? He becomes white chocolate.
It's the white chocolate of superheroes.
But we never got your opinion on this, Lou.
I think at the end of the day, both companies are going to be fine. you know, so I don't know, like, part of me enjoyed...
You don't think the president or the CEO of Marvel is going to be going home right now, kind of like dreaming?
Crying into his Tesla. drowning his sorrows in like a bottle of Moet.
Moet?
Moet and Cambodian.
You got me Moet.
So, but, you know, creatively, I think I want to see where this goes. I want to see how being put in the situation makes Kevin Feige and the rest of the... I don't know if the Russos are even doing anything anymore. Pull this off. And maybe from the Spider-Man perspective too. Yeah, like you said, Spider-Man has a great, like, library of bad guys and characters that have barely been touched. And even if they do want to kind of dig into it a little bit more, like your, you know, Dr. Octopuses that have been done once, you know, do it again. Do it great. Do it amazing. I trust... John Watts, I think, is the Spider-Man home directors.
But apparently, according to the news cycles, is he hasn't been confirmed as a director yet.
Oh, okay.
So because of all the stuff that's up in the air.
Oh, crazy. So the actors are on a contract.
Yes.
Director, not so much. All right. Kind of makes sense. So, you know, we'll see. I think Tom and Zendaya are going to be just fine. They're still going to be the icons that they were. And I don't think they're going to, like, drop this series the way that they kind of did with Andrew Garfield's version of Spider-Man, like, without a, you know, without a proper send-off. So we'll I think they'll be fine. And like I said, hopefully somebody else in the MCU will stand up and become that new character that everybody attracts to.
Well, I think that's going to be interesting, though. Do they actually do that? Does Sony, you know, continue with it?
I know.
And take that storyline and go on with it? Or are they going to do the whole, okay, let's reboot it?
Yeah.
You know, we'll keep Zendaya, we'll keep Tom Holland, maybe the big guy will be there too.
Maybe we'll keep Ned, sure.
Yeah, but everything else changes.
Yeah, we need more Filipinos in comic book movies.
So, yeah, you're right. And part of me just realizes, actually, it's one of those funny things staring in my face is, yeah, the fact that maybe that's why they reimagined Zendaya, or, you know, this version of MJ, and Peter's best friend is Ned instead of Harry Potter. Wow. Harry Osborn.
Is that a Sony? That's a Universal property, isn't it?
Getting our properties all mixed up. Is that, yeah, so maybe this is, like, you know, the MCU's version of, like, kind of tiptoeing around the issue that Sony does own, like, a lot of the Spider-Man characters. Green Goblin, you know, the Sinister Six, Venom, all that good stuff. Speaking of which, I guess last quick thought, I'm going to kind of harp on what amazing news, or, you know, that we went to the Fat Man Beyond taping, and mm-hmm. I got to harp what Kevin Smith and Mark Bernard kind of mentioned, is that, you know what, it's not going to be all that bad, because last I checked, Sony was able to pull off a really good Spider-Man movie this last year called Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
So, you know, Lord and Miller, Phil Lord, they did the Lego movies and all those fun new cartoons. If they are in charge, or if they're going to be the Feige of Sony, I trust them, because so far they've gone, like, you know, they're batting 100. They're going 4-for-4 or however.
If you bet 100, you're betting a terrible percentage. I mean,
1,000. Sorry,
that's 1 out of 10, my friend.
Obviously, he doesn't watch baseball.
I don't watch the baseball. So I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, though. I kind of agree, but was that really a Spider-Man movie?
Yeah, it was. But you know what? It had more Spider-Man pathos than like Far From Home.
Exactly.
Because I mean, the whole moral of the Peter Parker character, or at least for the Spider-Man character, is that you always get up.
Exactly.
We never got that in.
That's like the thing they've never done, aside from Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Even Andrew Garfield. No. They still have not been able to get the idea of who Spider-Man is. Yeah. So I think I'm holding my breath. You know, I don't think I'm not gonna hope too much, but I think it would be interesting though that if this happens and it bombs,
oh yeah,
what happens next?
Yeah. That's when they said they'll crawl back for like 35%.
Yeah, Sony is gonna.
They'll take it. The 35 and they'll give Disney the 65%. So that's why, like Lewis mentioned, we actually were at a taping for the Fat Man Beyond podcast with Kevin Smith and Mark Bernardin. And I was telling these guys the reason when they started talking about it, and Kevin Smith was really animated about how he really wanted Spider-Man to stay in the MCU. As much as we are podcasters, we're also appreciative of someone else doing their craft and doing their work. And I didn't, you know, you don't want to jump in like some other people. I want to keep my opinions to myself because it's not our show.
No,
I really wanted to be like, I don't understand why you of all people want this relationship to continue. Mainly because, like I've been saying, it's like, let's keep the character independent. Let's move on from the MCU. Now is your opportunity. But his opinion just seems to be shared by so many different people. Like, so many people. And having Ryan Reynolds and having Jeremy Renner, mm-hmm. like, actually being like, you know, we're starting a petition to get, you know, Sony bought out by Disney just so that they can hold on to the Spider-Man character. I'm like, everybody is overreacting to this. Like, the worst thing that can happen is, like Dennis said, the movie bombs. What happens then is, you know, you get the chance to redo it all over again. So, like, worst case scenario, a bad Spider-Man movie happens, which is, you know, like Lewis said, batting 1-for-100 over here. But the word, like, you know, the best thing that can happen is Sony becomes the new home of Spider-Man, like the home of Spider-Man, and there's no questions about it anymore. Like, when is Spider-Man gonna rejoin the MCU? He's not.
Mm-hmm.
What if they go with that decision? I'd be fine with it.
I think it'd be great too. I just realized my headcanon is the next movie is gonna start with like Tom Holland's Peter Parker falling through one of those portals from Into the Spider-Verse and just hand wave the whole thing. We're in a new universe now. Nothing happened.
Now, you know, kind of to end this whole thing, Harold kind of talked about it. You know, the whole idea that there's people up in arms. You know, our podcast is called Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual. I kind of have a feeling, to be honest with you, it's really the casuals that are that into it. Because think about it. You know, how many, like, hardcore comic book fans really out there were the ones that that watched Endgame, you mm-hmm. know, and all these movies. Yes, there's a lot of us who are real big fans of it, but the reason why it made that much money is because there's so many other casuals out there that's absolutely never seen these things, and then now they feel that they own this, that this is their thing,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's why there's such a huge, you know, backlash against it. I mean, I hate to say it, you know, I love my Ryan Reynolds. I think Jeremy Renner is is pretty cool, but they are not comic book fans. They are people, you know, maybe Deadpool. You know, it seems like Reynolds has a clean grasp of it, but they're not necessarily what we would consider hardcore fans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think I say we ended the whole thing by yes, we're gonna survive. You know,
it'll be okay.
It'll be okay.
And Uncle Ben, not so much, but everybody else, okay.
I saw a meme that my buddy posted today that made me crack up pretty hard. It was the meme from Austin Powers 2, where it's like, why make billions when we can make millions? This is like, accurate.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens then. And, you know, who knows? Maybe in like 2-3 years when the next Spider-Man movie comes out, we'll see what happens. And yeah, who knows? Maybe we will be a better, you know, community just for this.
I didn't say by then maybe we'll be a better podcast. I doubt it.
I mean, will we still talk to each other?
Oh.
Yeah. Will there be a Yoko Ono somewhere?
Will I be bought out? Will Harold be bought out?
When he said Yoko, I was like, will there be a Yokozuna in here? I was like, wait.
So if we were, let's kind of end it here. If we were movie conglomerates, would you be Sony?
I guess so. I would be the broke one, or at least,
or are you Fox? We just got.
No, I think I'm Fox. Yeah, you're right. I'm Fox.
Now moving on to our next subject, we were lucky enough to be invited by a good friend of the podcast and a good friend of ours, Winston Imano from Phil-Am Arts, to the debut of a new documentary series that was debuting on Netflix.
How many times can Harold say the word debut?
We're talking about Filipinos? Probably 18.
Get oh, it? Yes!
Speaking of Phil-Am Arts. Anyways, but no, we're talking about an actual good film.
Oh! Shout out to Dante Bosco.
Shout down to Dante Bosco.
But I still love you, Dante Bosco.
Just for that one movie. I can't remember what it is.
Rufio.
Yeah, because I didn't know his one film. But so Winston invited us
there
to...
There was the debut.
That's what I was talking about, man. Gonna get rid of this guy, dude. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong... Gonna get rid of this guy. Oh, wait, I gotta get my own podcast. Anyways. So Winston...
I mean, we do have enough microphones
that all of us could do. Why don't we do individual podcasts and we'll just, you know, form it together like Voltron.
I was thinking pizza, but Voltron works too, dude.
I'm just saying. But the series that Winston invited us to check out was a documentary series filmed in the Philippines within the last couple of years. The series is called Happy Jail. The big to-do with the series was because a few years ago, there was a big viral video from inmates that were dancing in this... detention center, and they just happened to do a giant choreographed version of Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And people loved it. They were sharing that video everywhere. They were like, oh, if this is what jail is like in the Philippines, then, you know, put me in jail anytime. And a lot of people were like, the Philippines is naturally a happy place, and it makes sense that the inmates at a, you know, maximum security prison would be actual, you know, be deceptively happy to be there. And so that's kind of the storyline that they ran with, was because that was the facade that you get, you know, from the initial screening of any of those viral videos. But filmmaker Michelle Hosue and her other producers and cinematographers, they went a different direction, and they wanted to see the story behind the inmates and the personnel of this particular jail. So we got to see a preview screening of the first two episodes.
Yep.
We saw it at the Vista Theater in lovely hipster California.
Yep.
And it was so hipster that Dennis was able to get like a cup of coffee for $30, and they gave him a mustache. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. So
that is some good coffee. Yes.
So what did you guys, first of all, before we get into the series, which we are going to delve into, what do you guys think of the presentation itself?
Well, before we even get to that, I got to tell you, when you told me that Winston had asked us, or not had asked us, had invited us to the screening, and you told me what the premise was, I was like, I was so excited, I got to tell you. I was like, I'm going to see a behind the scenes, like, choreography. It's going to be like, you know, in my head, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like a... them one, you know, five, six, seven, eight, they're gonna be,
yeah, right.
That, and then in the end, there's gonna be like one big like show and everything. Uh-huh. And then as I sat there, I'm like, oh, this is not the movie I was expecting.
The trailer is exactly what Dennis's feelings were, where it's like, this is the video that gets you to watch the series, but this is the behind the scenes stuff. And then it's literally just like,
Yeah.
So when you were saying the presentation, you're talking about the show itself?
Just the experience that we went to.
So, yeah, okay. So when we got to the Vista Theater, I thought I've never been to this theater. I thought, well, first and foremost, the seats were really comfortable.
I know, right? That was nice.
Considering where it was, I really thought it was going to be a little crowded. Me, Harold, and Lewis were able to fit together, and our elbows were not necessarily touching at all.
We were sharing popcorn from one bucket.
Exactly. And the popcorn was damn, inexpensive.
I thought you said it was damn tasty. I was like,
no, inexpensive.
It was reasonably priced.
It was less than $5.
I don't know. You're the one that paid for it. No. I just bought myself a drink like a selfish bastard.
You didn't even share that.
No, because I knew you guys didn't want to drink.
So, the actual production itself, I think it was kind of interesting. I was confused, to be honest with you. Because it was Happy Jail, yes. Okay. But then there was the inmates dressed in the jumper and everything.
There were staff dressed as inmates with orange jumpsuits zipped up with big black letters in the back that said inmates passing out flyers and helping
organize. I honestly didn't know how to feel about that. it looked nice and everything, but I felt kind of uncomfortable if we were to be honest about it, and especially when they started dancing. I'm like, okay, I get it, this is the whole thing, but considering what we saw afterwards,
oof, yeah,
it seemed like it didn't really connect with each other.
Bit of a mixed message. I see what you mean. Yeah, Dennis and Harold were saying, beautiful theater in Silver Lake. I think that's what the neighborhood is called. One of those rare single screen theaters left in LA. It's not like one of those huge 16 multiplex AMCs
that has not become a church.
Right, exactly.
Like down the street from here.
So, it was a really nice experience. It's the old school. Ironically, I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood just came out. It was talking about how beautiful those days were. And that this theater is definitely one of those holdouts from those days where it's got the big old school marquee. It's got a beautiful theme. I think it's Egyptian or something like that. And it was. I'll give it up to Winston and Phil M. Arts for putting together, they had a jeepney outside of the theater, which attracted a lot of people. Not to mention, yes, the people in the jumpsuit. I think they kind of did their job, which was to basically just get people's attention. Harold and I were, walking from a thrift store because Dennis went to get coffee. But it worked because there was...
By the way, that sentence sounded so hipster.
Because we were in Silver Lake. Then Lewis and I were thrift shopping.
Well, Dennis was having his cold brew.
For vintage shoes.
We really were.
Yeah, we really were.
But so there was at least one or two people walking with us crossing the street saying, what's going on over there? So, I mean, as a marketing gimmick or whatnot, it worked. Because, you look at a bright-looking jeepney, you look at people dressed as inmates, hopefully they didn't escape. So we did our best to explain
over here. Happy Jail on it.
Yeah,
we got people crashing into each other. But the funny thing
is, yes, you're right. I think that's probably what caused it. So yeah, we were witness to a big accident. It's like, wow. But yeah, so the production itself, well put together, well organized. There was just a small line. I love my people, but it did run on Filipino time.
Super
Filipino time, because our ticket did say 8 p.m. begin. Showtime. We got in at 8:30.
Yeah,
movie or the showing didn't start till 8:45.
Yeah,
but props to our people for staying consistent at least. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
it was just first of all, it was nice. Winston is a friend of ours that we've met throughout our years being from CSUN, and then for me also, and Dennis sometimes participating in things like the Festival of Philippine Arts and Culture, where we run in the same community, and like you said. Your wife is very familiar.
Yes.
That sounds weird.
Yeah.
She's very familiar with
Winston!
but it's like, we talk about the fact that, we'd like to delve ourselves into our art culture once in a while. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to be invited to an event like that.
Absolutely,
we're part of the Filipino community as well, and actually going as somewhat press. So that's why, this is not a paid podcast. Right. Yes. We're doing this out of our own volition, and we're talking about it. We're giving our own opinions on it. And, you know, hopefully someday we'll get a chance to speak with the filmmakers and, you know, get their opinions or get their, you know, experience and find out what it's like to film. Because they are, at least the director seems, and I'm pretty sure either Filipino-American or Filipino-Canadian. Mm-hmm. I'm not too sure which one she is, but basically meaning that she's going to the Philippines as technically an outsider.
Right.
To film a series about Filipinos in the Philippines. And it's just, that's obviously a subject that's been taken care of, you know, dozens of times before. But for the first time, you know, having it behind, you know, restricted doors in terms of being in a, like a detention center. So...
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to jump right back in there. And yes, I think this is the, what I really enjoyed about that is, yeah, being invited to one of these events again. I think back in college, I mean, there was a small part of my life when I was very active in that, along with Dennis and Errol for about, you know, 3-4 years. So, you know, not that I don't act like an adult, but you know, being my mid-30s, it's been years since I've done anything like that.
And I still really in your mid-30s?
Aren't I? Oh, late 30s.
You're in late
30s. So it felt good to be part of that again. Like, yes. You know, we took for... I shouldn't say take for granted, but, you know, I those days were fun back in when we were younger in college, and they would be like, oh, we're doing something in San Pedro. Let's go. Or there's a fundraiser going in downtown. You know, head there. So this was a really nice change of pace for an evening on a Thursday, I think it was, or a,
Thursday,
you know, a weekday, you know, on a weeknight. So very cool. I mean, really appreciate it for reaching out there. And Winston and his crew did really do an admirable job of reaching out into the community. Like, there are, you know, there are niche voices out there that needs to be heard. And I'm glad that this one, you know, however you enjoy the show itself, I'm just glad it got an avenue through Netflix. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's dive in. I don't know if we want to do reviews. I mean,
I think we
could do a little bit of review. Yeah. Just you know, opinion based stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we'll do a little bit of spoilers. So, spoiler alert for Happy Jail, kind of. I mean, because there's some parts that I do want to talk about. Oh. So, and the show at the time of this posting, the show's been out for at least a week and a half.
It's a couple of weeks now. Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of weeks. So, you know, hopefully, if you have heard about Happy Jail, we've been advertising. Sorry. Just take that back. We've been talking about it on our Facebook and our Instagram pages. So hopefully you've had a chance to check it out. I know some of my friends and family have had a chance to check it out. But if you haven't, spoilers. Like, we might drop a few hints here or there, but we're not going to go too deep into it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So it's kind of one of those things that's kind of hard to kind of talk about. Like, do we go episode by episode?
Yeah.
Or maybe, as you were talking about, maybe certain aspects of it, certain...
Let's do certain aspects.
That we enjoyed.
So, yeah, so
let's start off with you.
Let's sure, okay. So, you know, I like the format. 5 episodes, about 35 to 40 minutes each. So it's, you know, in the scheme of things, it's really easy to consume. You know, I take the train every morning, so I was able to finish that in about a couple trips. Production-wise, it's really well made. Like... You know, I just came back from the Philippines, like I mentioned. We do a lot, you know, we watch a lot of shows over there. And not to knock on how their production is over there, but this one looks like a movie. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. I mean, I'm not...
He's saying the shows on TFC don't look good.
I'm just saying.
I would.
It looks like it was filmed in a soundstage.
Yeah, like the same stage as Sesame Street.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's just really well made. So kudos to Michelle, right?
Yeah.
And her production company for putting that together, making it look like $1 million. Story-wise, like Harold mentioned, you're hooked by the viral aspect of it. Like, yes, I think we were still in college. When did it come out? Anyway,
no, I was already working.
Okay, it was still during the younger days of YouTube when, yes, you know, viral meant, we didn't even know what viral meant. People just sent it around.
Some of us knew what viral meant, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, not many of us, though.
Jeez.
Talking about me. I have no idea.
Oh, man. Sorry. So, you know, we were there when that, you know, that video went around, when our parents would share it and all that stuff. So seeing this, that's the hook. You get in there and you're like, and like Dennis was saying, like, oh, maybe it'll be a fun little thing about, like, how they get over their angst and their anxiety and their pain through dance. It's not. It gets the hook. Gets you there, but it takes a bit of a 180 because it takes a look at a lot of the shady, seedy side of politics, the jail environment, the Philippines per se, and how like really sketchy that whole thing is, yeah. Drug culture. It gets really dirty and it gets kind of depressing at some points. You know, they do interview some of these inmates, and some of these inmate stories are super sad. Like, I got a feel for some of these guys. I can't, you know, I think that's kind of what I liked about it too, is that the director didn't really spell out, yes, he's purely innocent, because a lot of the people that they interviewed, they pled. Is that passing to plead?
Yes.
They pled innocent. You know, one guy was saying that, I wasn't even in this fight. Like, it was me and two other drinking buddies.
I went home.
The other two guys started a fight. I went home to my wife and his girlfriend and my daughter. Next thing I know, I'm brought to jail. And you know, the only reason the other guy's free is because he has bail money and I'm poor, so yeah. I'm here. So it's like, well, that's really depressing. So you got to feel for that guy. But like I said, the director of the show doesn't really hold your hand and say, oh, he's really innocent. So you're left hanging with that question, like, okay, I feel you. He's a young guy. He's got to be like in his 20s, something like that.
Has a little girl.
He's got a little girl, a little boy. His girlfriend seems very, like, you know, anxious, full of anxiety of, like, you know, come home. You have a family. And it's like, you got to feel for this guy. So, yeah, that hook is very, very powerful. So, you know, props to that one.
You know, kind of going off on what you're talking about, the one thing I liked about the show is that it was vague.
Yeah,
I can't. No, I'm going to take that back. It wasn't really vague. It was presented in a way, and I guess that's what vagueness is. It was presented in a way where after the first episode, I think I turned to Harold. I'm pretty sure it was Harold. I was like, "Who's the bad guy?"
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Because for those people who maybe this is not necessarily a spoiler. One of the main characters is this guy named Marco, and he is the warden.
He's not even the warden. Consultant.
Consultant. Okay. So basically, he has been pretty much put in charge. Even though the warden is in charge of everything, he has become the person that is running this jail. And you start off. It's amazing. You kind of start off with the whole thing where there's that congresswoman. You know, talk about the. When I was a congresswoman, this is how great this was. You know, and the moment I see Marco, I was like, this SOB. You know, you've run everything down. But then as you listen to his story, as you listen to the things that he's done, you're like, wait a minute, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
You know, and in a way, it really is a happy jail. You know, a couple of things that I, like, to this day when I was talking to somebody about it, it's like the whole idea of the family day. The idea that you can bring your, you know, in prison, at least based on what I've seen with The Flash, you know, you have to talk to the person like
behind the glass.
But then in this movie, this guy Marco has figured out this ingenious thing where you're able to bring in your family and you have like a fiesta for a day, and you at least get these families and children, you know, together with their husbands and wives and everything. And I thought it was really good. You know, I thought it was great. And so I ended up halfway through that movie, by the second episode, I was like, this guy is amazing. This Marco guy is the greatest person in the whole wide world. But then later on, another kind of U-turn is like, wait a minute, is he really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that that hook, that was the reason why I got hooked all five episodes.
I think also like Dennis said, the title of the series itself is somewhat misleading. And that's what kind of that for me was a great hook. We keep using the word hook, but and we talked about Dante Bosco. literally, you know, the title of the whole series is called Happy Jail, and the first image you believe is that whole dancing inmate. So you're like, automatically, everybody who goes to this jail is a happy person, and there's not going to be anything bad that we're going to learn about anything in there. And it's like they get you with that storyline first. And then they get you with but some of these people are murderers, some of these people are drug dealers.
Yeah.
Like, our main choreographers or our lead dancers are going to be people who committed serious crimes like murder or rape and stuff. And it's like, yeah, because those, like Lewis is cracking up, and it's also kind of true. It's like, yeah, put those guys in charge because they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the guy who stole candy from, like, one of the barrios, that guy might go in, like, the next day or so.
But, so don't teach him choreography. Teach the guy who killed someone.
Teach him choreography so he can teach it to the world, which is, you know, just the basic learnings that we've learned from other cultural dancers. But we've never taught, I don't think we've taught murderers or anything like that. But I was telling these guys, it's also, for me, it's very interesting because every time I go to the Philippines, I go to Cebu. Because Cebu is the biggest island next to our province, which is Bohol. It's literally a, if you take the super fast jet, it's an hour ride. Or if you take like the slow boat, it's like 6 hours. But it's literally the next island. And, you know, people go in and out from the islands all the time. I have family that, you know, work in Cebu but live in Bohol. So even when the first viral video came out, I was like, I'm going to be kind of familiar with at least the surroundings that everybody's with. And like these guys were joking with me during our break earlier, is like literally every person that was talking on the screen sounded like either my mom or my aunties. And the older ladies, it sounded like my grandma. And some of the dudes sounded like my uncles who were just hanging out on the porch and stuff. And so, like, I would get flashbacks. I'm like, ugh, I'm back. And it's one of the few languages that I sort of understand. Like, I do understand Visayan, like, as a dialect in Cebuano. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, I don't need subtitles. And then I keep forgetting that I was like, oh, yeah, that's for everybody else who doesn't understand Filipino English accent.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, you kind of got to, like... For us, it's like, you know, watching those Manny Pacquiao movies or like shows, and it's like, why are they putting subtitles? Yeah. Oh,
he's perfect. He's speaking perfectly fine. Like,
he's perfectly speaking. Says the fob.
So it's like it was a great, interesting, you know, kind of getting into the story, and then the characters themselves. Like Lewis was able to ask a question, and he was during the panel at the end of the showing of the screening. They opened it up to questions, and Lewis asked a question, and Lewis's question pertained to which particular inmates...
Yeah, why did they choose the inmates that they did? And the director and the producers, their answer was that, it's consent. That was the biggest word that they kept repeating, was that, you know, they walked in there, and they could tell who had a story to tell and who wanted to talk to them. And, you know, in a jail of... How many was it? 2,000 people? Good grief.
Yeah.
2,000 inmates in that building. You know, they focused in on about a handful of people, like four or five inmates, men.
One or two guards.
Right, one or two guards. Men or women, some gay inmates. Some
partitions.
Yeah. And, you know, it was very interesting. All their stories were unique, in a sense. You know, I think personally my favorite pairing was... So, you know, in this weird jail culture they have in the prison is that, you know, you have the warden and then you have the consultant, but the inmates themselves had their own boss, Bosio, and he met a girl who was also an inmate, and they are like, I don't think they were married, but they're like, they have an agreement, I guess, or they're, you know, they're in a relationship, and she happens to be the boss of the female inmates. And, you know, it was a weird power dynamic, and, you know, to champion all my Filipino ladies out there, it was hilarious when she was making jokes about, like, you know, he doesn't do anything without me knowing, and, you know, he knows better than to cross her. So, you know, it was a fun little dynamic, and you were kind of, I was rooting for them to hopefully get out of there, or at least something positive happened to the relationship at the end, so, yeah.
One of the other characters that I found really interesting... was, of course, the choreographer.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
I think the choreographer is literally like...
He's just one guy, right?
Yeah, and he was hired because of the whole virality of the original performance. And it's like, we want to continue making those kinds of, you know, they want to be popular because of that. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, they hired this guy, and he has no, like, real life stakes in it. It's just he wants... the inmates to have fun, and he wants to entertain. And it's like, you know, he takes himself seriously enough that they do have to do like great performances and whatnot. But at the same time, there's no consequences to not performing.
Yeah.
There's no consequences to, you know, doing a bad job, because mm-hmm. he's there just for the fun. And then this is for the first spoiler alert, where towards the end of the series, where they're like, we're going to stop doing performances altogether. Mm-hmm. He was one of the saddest characters to watch.
Yeah.
Because it's literally like, his somewhat life's work, where he meant the most to other people, is, you know, just being thrown away to the side due to politics.
Yeah.
Now that you kind of mentioned that spoiler, that really is the thing that surprised me, just how much I connected with these characters. You know, and I'm sorry, not characters, these people.
The actual people.
The actual people. Because that's the thing, though, is that whether or not, you know, they kind of made it so easy. Oh, just people who wanted to be there. It just so happened to the people that they had such profound stories that I was really rooting for them. You know, the one guy that we just talked about with the young child. You know, I in the end when I, you know, he was hoping, you know, he was talking about how I'm about to leave, and then because of the how the Filipino justice system works, you know, he has to get extended. And then when he found out that the whole thing, that everything that makes them the happy jail was going to disappear, you could see the faces of each of these inmates. You knew for a fact that everything was going to end and it's going to be terrible. And you're like, fudge.
Yeah.
You know, what's going to happen to you? And I think that's, and I know, you know, I know, I'm pretty sure, you know, that they're at the filmmaker's access to the jail is now gone because of everything that's happened.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, part of me, you know, I'm one of those people that got angry at Harry Potter because I didn't get enough closure, you know what I mean? Like, that was one of the things. When I found out that there was, like, end scenes, I guess you can call it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, please, for the love of God, let there be good news.
Yeah.
Let there be something that you know, let this guy, you know, have been seen with his wife, you know, and his children and everything. But I was like, man, you know, and in the end, I was sitting there going, it's a good movie. It's a profound movie. But I left there. I don't know what the purpose, what they wanted to get from me. But I left there kind of, I don't know the word disappointed, but I was sad for the situation, for the politics, for, you know, the government, for everything. Considering that, you know, we, even though all three, both of us have immigrated, and Harold was born here. Yes. You know, we still have love for the country, and we still want good things to happen for the country.
Yes.
And seeing something like this really just tore at my heartstrings, and I think that's a testament of how well these filmmakers were able to do the series.
Yeah, and we're talking about one of the scenes that really kind of touched us was. So the main character that everyone's going to learn to either love or hate Sir Marco.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a part where Sir Marco's mom's house gets broken into and someone steals his TV. And he assumes that, you know, the person that's stolen the TV from all the intelligence that he's been given is living under a bridge like a troll. Like we literally said,
like a literal troll.
Literal troll.
Not like an internet troll.
Yeah, and he finds the guy.
There's a guy on a computer. Yeah. He doesn't even know how to use a phone.
He's like, I stole your stuff. That's the sad part. It's like, they bring this guy in who, you know, there's no real basis to bring him in. So that's one of the reasons where you're like, yeah, this Sir Marco guy doesn't know what he's doing or whatnot. But he's literally like, hey man, you got the wrong person. Here's a couple of pesos, like 20 bucks in, you know, translated. Well, here's a phone. If you ever find out, if you get any information on, you know, the guy, then give us a call. And it's sad because the guy's like, I don't know how to use a phone. And this is a movie or a series that was created just a few years ago.
Yeah.
So we're looking at least for us, a society that as modern as we'd like to believe that, you know, the Philippines is, there are still some people that live below that poverty line that have no idea about anything technological or anything advanced. And it's, you know, for me and for these guys, it was sad to see, you know, something like that, because obviously these two guys had just came back from that country, and me, when I visit, that's part of the country where I go to. So
yeah, it was kind of sad to see how bewildered the guy looked.
Yeah,
especially, not to mention, you mentioned the cell phone, but looking at the camera, like, what is that? Like, why is there a bright light on
he's
my
literally
face?
Doc Brown in Back to the Future.
Yeah, it's sad.
And he's like, what is this portable studio?
Yeah, you know, going back to Sir Marco, I think, I don't know if we've mentioned what actually made him kind of controversial, I guess, in the first place, was the fact that he himself was a ex-inmate. This is not a spoiler. I mean, they go into in the first few minutes of the show. So, you know, they tell you outrightly that's what the ex-governor's, you know, her biggest grief is, that how are you going to put an ex-con in charge of actual convicts? And You know, throughout the show, he actually puts up a pretty good argument why. Because, yeah, yes, the warden is technically in charge, but, yeah, you see from the whole show that he runs the guards. He runs the culture. You know, he's the one
who... He trained the guards.
Yeah, he hired the guards. He, you know, he runs the inspections. He basically cultivates whatever, you know, environment he wants in that place. And for the most part, you know, it seemed like he was running a pretty... Yeah. Happy jail. You know, that he gave them a few luxuries, you know, and I have a friend, shout out to one of our listeners, Officer Hernandez, who was actually in corrections. He sent me a DM saying, that's not at all how we do things. Like, yeah, dude, we're here in the States. Of course there's no cell phones. You know, we take a look inside these cells where a lot of these inmates were able to, well, quote unquote, smuggle cell phones, a couple of lives luxuries. There's a small scene, you blink and you miss it, where they're playing tennis with actually nice rackets. Like, those aren't like the wooden rackets that I played with in middle school. You know, these are actually nice rackets. And these are not the kind of things that you can get, you know, anywhere else. But, you know, they're happy. So, yes, there was a bit of a drug problem. But, again, it's one of those vague things where, was there a drug problem? Or was it, like, a created thing saying, this guy is running a drug cartel out of his, you know, out of his jail? So, a lot of unanswered questions. But, yeah, so... I guess to answer Dennis's question earlier, what the point of the show is, I think it's just to get a reaction. I mean, for the most part, I think that's what art is supposed to be. You know, film, TV shows, music, whatever. It's supposed to get a reaction, and it did. For me, it got a very visceral reaction of like, this is tragic. It wasn't sad. It wasn't pity. It's not pathos. It's not, you know, Peter Parker getting kicked while he's trying to catch his bus. You know, this is actual human beings. And, you know, part of the film or what kind of killed me during the showing was towards the end when it was wrapping up. I don't know who it was. I don't think it was the director, but they kind of blurted out, yeah, when those people die at the end. And like, I looked at you guys going, oh, somebody dies. So I was watching the show, the five episodes, with that hanging over my head. I was like, who's going to die?
Please, not you.
And then when he does, like, oh, no.
I know. So.
Not them.
Sorry. Oh, choked on the candy. My bad.
Sorry. So, you know, to kind of end the whole thing, you know, we don't have a review system.
We don't have a ranking system, you know, a rating system.
But, you know, how many dancing inmates? Is that politically correct? I'm not quite sure.
Sure.
How about how many dancing presenters at the Vista Mall or at the Vista Movie Theater in red pajamas will we count it? Well, 1 out of 10. Is it something that you feel was worth it? Is it something that we'd be willing to suggest to everybody, which we kind of have been? Mm-hmm. You know, what do you guys think?
I would give it 7 out of 10. I'm not like an avid. I guess it's a docuseries, is what it's called. It's not a documentary movie per se, but you know, a docuseries where you have to, you know, invest a good amount of time. Not a lot of time, but as a series, I think it's really well made. It's up there with, you know, a lot of the good stuff on Netflix. I know it's a little bit of, you know, kind of gore or violence porn, I guess is what they're calling it. It's like a lot of these, you know, behind the murder kind of things where they not glorify, but they do a really deep dive and into these cases and kind of put it with a very nice glossy sheen. So it's definitely, the production's really up there, so it's really well made. Story might upset you, depress you. Hopefully it makes, you know, people do something to help a lot of these inmates. And, you know, so yeah, 7 out of 10. I'd recommend at least watching one or two episodes and see if it hooks you.
Yeah, production value-wise, I think it's ranks pretty high.
Yeah.
You know, while doing that, it reminded me of like a Anthony Bourdain.
You're right. That's what it looks,
you know,
like.
And especially like with, I was joking around. You know, just how many, you know, just how many drone shots do you need of Happy Jail?
Of the prison, yeah.
You know, so that's the one thing that I got. Story wise, I was engaged enough that I think that it's something that, you know, considering the story, considering where it's from, I think it's something that I would highly recommend. I would be going around 8, okay. 9 out of 10.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I'm with Dan, probably around an 8. The subject matter is an interesting one.
Yeah.
And is very different than anything I'm used to at least seeing on Netflix. One of the big points that was brought up to us while we were watching the screening was this is a series created by Filipinos, mm-hmm. about Filipinos, shot in the Philippines and on the biggest streaming platform in the universe. And it's important that small projects like this that weren't backed by, you know, giant studios and are just ideas that came from people and, you know, just had the audacity to go out there and do it. Projects like that need to be supported. And especially from us being from the Filipino community, you know, we have to support our fellow artists because technically the three of us are artists, mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. And excuse me. But at the same time, we wouldn't just support something just because the creator
exactly
mm-hmm. is a Filipino. We had to believe, yeah, you know, we can, you know, there's been projects that, you know, you're like, oh, we'll support them just because, but now an actual project that has of substance and quality that makes you want to share it with other people. And yet it somewhat shows our Philippine culture in a negative light in some aspects, but at the same time, there's some very positive things that you see mm-hmm. about that. So getting people from our own community to watch this series is important. It's also just as important as getting people from outside of our community yeah. to be involved and see exactly what's going on and things that, you know, we may have no idea about.
Yeah. One more thing for me, I guess, to kind of sweeten the deal, too, is we haven't mentioned, but the director, Michelle Josue, is actually an Emmy Award-winning director. She made the documentary Matthew Shepard Is My Friend about the tragic end of Matthew Shepard, the gay... he wasn't even an activist. He was a...
Just a regular person?
It was a kid who was brutally murdered, so it was a... I saw a little bit of it. Unfortunately, you know, my stomach can only take so much unfortunate tragedy, so, you know, I couldn't quite finish it. But, you know, like I said, the show reflects just how good of an eye she has for telling these human stories from that level. And I know Dennis mentioned the drones, but ironically, even with all the huge, beautiful shots of Cebu, of the whole province and island, you know, the story is very grounded. It's very human. You know, you can feel the emotion, you can feel the grit, you can feel the drama from these inmates. So, yeah.
And not only that, but you can feel really that these filmmakers, considering that they were able to actually get in there and live there and everything, you can see that they were able to connect to these inmates and they were able to get the stories, you know, the emotions. And I think, you know, it really is something that, you know, I don't think it's going to be something where in the future I'm going to be sitting there going, you know what, I don't want to watch again.
Yeah.
I want to watch episode 3 of Happy Jail. But it's definitely something that I would recommend everybody go through at least once.
Yeah, I agree. Great point. Great idea.
Yeah. So, I mean, thank you again to Winston Imano and Phil-Am Arts for inviting us and having us
absolutely
as part of their big event. And, you know, we look forward to the future and being invited to similar themed events. And anybody else in the Filipino community that would like our support, just feel free to send us messages, contact us, and we are always willing and able to help you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're in the LA area, Orange County, adjacent neighborhoods,
Philippines,
we'll send someone remotely. we're more than willing, but you know, if we're able to, we'd love to.
Margo calls us.
Yeah. By the way, at the screening, we got to see in person Sir Marco, and so like we were like, oh, he's real.
Yeah.
And he reminds me of our friend's dad. So
he's somebody.
But he didn't have his weightlifting glove
or his shotgun.
Or his shotgun.
So yeah, so he didn't die. So because oh, man. Sorry, spoilers.
Oh no, I told these guys he's actually a ghost.
So Happy Jail, something that we definitely want you guys to watch. something that should be on your account if you have not watched it yet. So that's it for us today. Hopefully you enjoyed our two topics today. As usual, please take a look at our contact. We have websites and Instagrams and all that crap that we populate. So for me, I always talk about twofanboys1casual.com. That is our website where Lewis has been like really just been jamming, dude, like content galore. So kudos to you, bro.
Yay.
Lisa, kudos. That's her name, right?
Yes.
No.
Oh, she's my favorite friend.
That's my favorite granola bar.
So, you know, aside from that, of course, we usually ask you to check out
our Facebook page, Two Fanboys and a Filthy Casual, all of our adventures in theater. We post it over there. We get to take a lot of fun little pictures when we get invited to these events. So please invite us. And whenever the podcast goes live, that's when we post it.
And then you can follow us on both Instagram and on Twitter at @twofanboys1casual. And actually, you know, we just got a couple of new things handed to us today. So if you guys are interested, send us a DM, send us some messages on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatnot. We might be able to send you some stuff.
Okay, that's it for us today. Hope you enjoyed the episode. As usual, this is Two Fanboys and Infinitely Casual. This is Dennis.
This is Lewis.
This is Harold.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I miss you, Sarah Margaret.